When athletes retire from a sport, they may pursue related jobs such as coaching or team management. NBA All-Star Jobari Carroll took a different path, following his love of fine art and writing. He has devoted recent years to creating his own works, mostly paintings. Several of those paintings appear with personal reflections in his 2013 memoir, Growing Up in Words and Images. Mr. Carroll's new book is titled Black American Voices, and he joins us now in studio to talk about it. Jobari Carroll, welcome back to City Lights.
Well, thank you for having me.
So good to have you here. What made you decide to write Black American Voices?
It kind of came out of a process that I was involved with. I'm a trustee for a collection of African American artifacts and carvings and figures that one of my professors from Purdue owned. And I was photographing them, and they begin to tell stories. You know, you feel things when you separate them individually. They begin to communicate. There's a certain music and song and storytelling that they provide. And over time, I decided to couple that with family albums, not my family necessarily, but just any of our families, regardless to what community we come from, as people tell their stories. Everybody has a story.
Indeed. And you match them with the corresponding piece of art. These are mostly sculpture, aren't they?
Yes. In this one, this is carving. And there's some pottery. But different people have responded in different ways with it because we're all so different. Some people focus on the African art, which is beautiful and stunning. And then some like the storytelling of the photographs because they're photographs throughout that correspond to the African art, and then the storytelling about who this person is and something interesting about their lives.
Well, tell us more about Tony Zamora. You said he was a professor of yours at Purdue?
Yeah, I call him a professor. He's actually the director emeritus of the Purdue Black Cultural Center, but he's the kind of the caretaker of all the children, the 1,000 black students out of 30 or 40,000 students at Purdue. He always was kind of our, you know, the vanguard for us. And we all have a special, you know, matter of fact, when I ran into his collection, I was just going running by their house when I was back at Purdue collecting my work from the exhibit I had back there. And I was just going to run by and hug their neck and say hi to he and his wife. And I ran into this just treasure trove of artifacts. And it was incredible. And he's 85 and in that certain season of life. And we talked about it and talked about it, and he agreed to trust me with it. And so I'm the trustee, and I'm trying to get it out and have people understand
how
it.
How many pieces?
I have 500 here.
Ooh. And yeah. These were all on display in their home?
Well, loosely speaking, on display. Remember, they're people of a certain age, and they buy what they like, so they just put it over there with the anticipation of doing what I end up doing, which was cataloging it all and storing it.
And will it be donated to a museum at a certain point?
That's part of what this project is about, is hopefully that it will create a certain kind of awareness around how beautiful the work is and that there will be an interest in it. They're community servants, so they've been very clear with me that it has to be, something good has to be done with it.
How did they learn about collecting?
I think they learned along the way. Most of us, we collect what we like. And so a lot of this work doesn't really have a whole lot of paperwork with it, but you can tell that it's real and it's exalted and it's all of what we've looked to Africa for in terms of art and meaning, culture, values.
I'm curious about how you decided which essays or commentary should be featured alongside the various photographs of the artwork, you know, sort of like a chicken and egg. Which came first, Barry?
I don't remember exactly. I just know that some of the figures necessarily are compatible with the photographs. Because so you go through the photo, I'll go to family albums or through some of my friends or people in the community, their photographs, and match that with the African carving. Because I wanted to make some type of establish some type of relationship, because sometimes African work is just exalted and it's in this place that people feel that is so high and far above everything that it can't integrate into our regular lives. And so I matched, it's from initially, I'm trying to answer your question. Initially, it's just the aesthetic. What looks like what, you know, how familiar are things. And then from there, I write the story.
You write the story, or you ask these various contributors to write?
Well, I had to condense it because I listen. I'm a big fan of, you know, StoryCorps and Studs Terkel and all these people. And one of the things I enjoy is like when you ask the question and let them just go. So they would just go on and on about their stories. And I would try to basically edit it down to what might be interesting to the general population.
So you had a particular piece of artwork in mind, and you invited various contributors to look at that particular piece, or did the folks whose essays are featured, were they looking at a large display?
Well, that would be too long of a game right there. You
can't. 500.
Right. Well, it's just too many pieces. It's too many people. We might even disagree on what they think is important, because some of the things that I think are just fascinating in terms of their own stories, their lives, they may not look upon it as necessarily fascinating. It's just the way they live. I think that's the magic of Black American Voices, is that these are people on a normal day doing these incredible things, speaking these great values, and showing up in life. So I didn't collaborate with them on which pieces go with it. I just took the pieces separately. I took the artwork, I took their photographs, and I interviewed them, or some of it may even be for people that are no longer living, it would be their historical story. Because, you know, when you get a certain age, you tell that story over and over and over again, so it's not hard to recall what at least the sentiment of the story was.
Well, let's start with the piece on page 21. You had mentioned that you thought this was a good starting point. Tell us about the photograph that appears.
21 or 27?
27.
27. Okay. Okay, so Ephraim Bailey is this career Atlanta Police Department, big broad-shouldered man, big gun and everything. But the most fascinating part about him is when he tells the story of how he met his wife. They've been married for 34 years. And he told me this story, and I was just like, it's got to be in the book.
And what is that story?
Well, would you like me? I'll read it.
I would.
Okay.
Like it.
Okay. So imagine he's in middle school. And so the picture in the book for the listener is that she's looking, there's a picture, a close-up shot of he and Sheila. I telephoned Sheila Millsap one day after school. I told her, my name is Ephraim Lamar Bailey, and we are in Miss Johnson's homeroom class together. I'm calling to tell you I want to go with you. Sheila's answer to me was, my mother and I are watching our stories on television. I will have to talk with you about this tomorrow. The next day, I walked her home from school as we entered our life together. We've been married for 34 years now. Ephraim Bailey, Warrensville Heights, Ohio.
And it's a beautiful photograph of two sculptures. Are they sculptures or carvings?
These are carvings. They're called swervers. It's a kind of a traditional expression in African culture. This notion of swervings, where you have the man and the woman looking at each other in kind of an angled way, which is kind of interesting because it's, I guess, a metaphor, perhaps, that how in order for us to have great relationships, we have to adjust our perspective to kind of incorporate the other person. So you see this kind of angler view that they each are having.
It is beautiful.
But I just think that's a great story. And the few people have, you know, it's early. The book was just released 2 weeks ago. So that's one of the more popular stories in there.
If you are just joining us, this is City Lights. Our guest today is Joe Barry Carroll. His new book is Black American Voices, which features essays from various contributors alongside photos of African art from the Zamora Collection. Carol Quiller, Jacksonville, Florida, has an essay I found especially moving. Would you read it?
What page are you on?
Carol Quiller is on page 117.
All right. I remember what I wrote. I just don't know what page it's on. Okay. Okay. This is a friend of mine that actually lives here in Atlanta. And I was struck. We were having dinner one night, and she was speaking about the approach she has to we were talking about communication. And she talked a little bit about how she approached during her job, because she's working with these variety of cultures. And it was just instructive to me, as well as, I think, enlightening for us as we consider other people who are not us. In my work, I serve nonprofits in underserved communities from Alaska to Mississippi. I work with tribes and communities of every stripe to help them comply with government relations, regulations, and filings. Before any work begins, I find it helpful to seek first to understand the folk I'm dealing with. I need to be sensitive to their culture and what is important to them in a way that will allow deeper understanding of the person, the tribe, and the community. Everyone and their way of life should be respected, their language, food, music, dress, and other cultural protocols. I spend time doing what seems unrelated to the chore at hand in an effort at showing respect. When I first acknowledge a community by respecting their ways, they become available to any conversation that follows.
I think Ms. Quiller belongs in Washington.
Well, I just thought it was perfect. And she's, you know, this high-profile, established professional. But she understands, in order to, you know, get anything done, you just can't, you know, bully yourself into a situation. You got to open your mind and open your heart to
Seems
other people's
so
way.
Seems so simple when you just say that. And yeah. Yet, not many.
Yeah, it's instructive.
Follow that. And the piece that is opposite Carol Quiller's comments is sculptural. Is it bronze?
Now, this is a carving.
This is.
And it's, I just thought it was beautiful because she's, as you can see, she's a very attractive woman. And, but the eyes that are, look slightly closed showed a kind of a meditative and reflective pose to it. And I thought it went perfect with her photograph.
The Zamoras, not surprisingly, are featured several times in the book.
Yeah, I had to, because they fuss at me. It's so funny. I bet I...
This is an acknowledgement of inspiration or thanks, or they're fussing? Is that just nagging you?
It's all in good spirit. It's just so funny. I was just giving you backstories that they are in the book. I think in another world, perhaps the entire book would be them, but I thought I would be able to have more diversity in thought and concept if I included other people. But it's so cute to see these 85, 90-year-old people fussing at. I'm like 7 feet, 300 pounds. I've been all around the world. But to them, I'm still like this little kid with a book bag on the college campus.
Keeps you grounded,
Barry. Yeah, they just, through the process, you know, because I would share, I would stop in and check in and let them know where we are. They'd give me a good talking to.
And look what you came
up with. I know. You know, teamwork makes the dream work.
Well, on page 121, we see Tony Zamora playing his saxophone, and a beautiful piece on the opposite page of a man playing an instrument. I don't know what it would be, but perhaps some ancient precursor to
a
saxophone.
Absolutely. And I thought it was perfect because they're even holding the instrument, you know, left hand, right hand. Obviously, a musician carved this piece. Tony's, he had spent all those years in the university system. And when he retired, he recreated himself or maybe he expanded on his career as a musician, because he plays the saxophone and all reed instruments. But he's very good. He has as much a reputation as that as he does an academic.
Wow. And there is a very sweet, short but sweet, mm-hmm. and touching essay on page 71 about twins and what it means to be a twin.
Yeah, I like that. There's a tradition in Africa, I want to say Nigeria, where when the when twins are born, there are statues made of them.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's a popular place. There's some majesty about twins. There's something special. People are we still remain fascinated by when twins come out, especially if they look alike. But this is Todd Coit and Tara Coit. Tara is actually the editor of the book, so she was destined to be in there as well.
But knowing about the significance of twins in Nigerian culture makes it all the more meaningful. Would you read this?
I like the photograph is she and her brother now in a current time. We were all together socially, and it's a wonderful shot that I took of them. And then on the opposing page is the African carvings of the twins with cowrie shells as a dress. I like being a twin because it makes me feel different. Todd and I grew up being referred to as the twins. Some folk would greet us with, "What's happening, twin?" or "Hey, twin," as their way of declaring us special. Then there are instances when calling me twin springs out of the custom of our community calling things by how they appear. For as much as I've always loved my brother, our being each other's twin seems to add a layer of special to what is already wonderful. Tara Coit, Atlanta, Georgia.
So beautiful. Yeah. You know, because sometimes people would think negatively, you don't have your own identity, or you're tired of being, you know, considered one of two instead of the individual. And here is this beautiful acknowledgement of just how special it is. Those pieces of the twins opposite that essay, those are exquisite with the shells. Do you have any idea of the age of these pieces?
It's really hard to tell. I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage with the Zamora collection because there's not a lot of documentation. They bought a lot of what they love. So coincidentally, their eye, their aesthetic, the things that appeal to them aesthetically also are significant pieces. In African artwork, in many parts of it, there's not a lot of identification, personal identification, so it's hard to trace because most of the work will come out of villages that are sanctioned by the king or whomever the leader is in the village, and sometimes it won't even have a name on it. So it's very difficult to track it.
You think about medieval churches, cathedrals, and, you know, the work and the architecture, the ornate interiors, and those are not signed either.
Right.
It stems from, I guess, a humbler place.
I'm not sure. I think there is some spiritual component to it. I'm not sure. It certainly frustrates those of us who would like to have more information, because I had to just make a decision at some point of what I would publish and what not, because I could not delve into the history. It would take too long. It would take couple decades to figure out exactly where this place was and who this was and carbon dating and all that kind of stuff. So I just took that and I ran with it. And this is what we came up with. I don't mind doing Tony if you wanted to do.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left.
Right.
The time has flown. And
right.
I
wanted to make sure I was answering your questions.
I
didn't want somebody out there going like, but she asked him about that and he never did answer.
No, you are very thorough and methodical,
okay.
Mr. Carroll. The final entry in the book features a photo of President Barack Obama with Charlene Smith and Imogene Smith. And the essay is from the Black Americans in just the 2 minutes left. Why did you choose that for the ending?
Well, there's a conversation within our community about how proud we are. None of us look at President Obama as perfect, but we are all clear that he's very good. And we're very proud of him, and we're very excited about what happened. And we joke sometimes that, man, he's the real thing. It's not like they just, you know, put somebody up there. This cat was, he was prepared and he came ready to do it, and he did it. And we just didn't want to. Part of the essay says that we were not going to wait for history, you know, because in retrospect, years from now, everybody will be clear on how talented this man is. Right now, there's debate for foolish reasons, but we are clear. We are clear.
And this essay and the faces, the shining faces, the pride of these people looking at President Obama.
Charlene Smith is the sister-in-law. Imogene Smith is the sister to Betty Zamora. And they worked in President Obama's campaign when he was a senator in Illinois. And they're in the back room. And you could kind of see the way they're looking up at him. It kind of reflects what ended up in the essay.
Well, it is an exquisite volume. I have to congratulate you on this. And I have to remind listeners also that you will be featured at the Decatur Book Festival.
I am on September 2nd at 4 o'clock.
September 2nd.
That's Saturday of Labor Day.
In the Marriott Conference Center, Room C.
Yeah. Come on out. We're going to show out. We're going to have a good time. I like to have fun. I don't, you know, my readings are a little unconventional.
So. Well, and the book is beautifully produced. Joe Barry Carroll is the author of Black American Voices, Shared Culture, Values, and Emotions. Congratulations on your second book, and thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.